closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
One of them. Yep, good. It works.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. I always try to bring it in at like a very oddly sexual moment, and that's what it was. My name is Nick Paul. We have co-host Simon Cornell.
Hey, and special third magician, third mic, Dom Chambers. How you doing?
I'm good. Big fan of the podcast.
Thanks.
Very big fan.
The podcast is a big fan of you because you're on it now.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
When we were going to get coffee and Simon's like, oh, we're going to get coffee with Don. I'm like, why don't we just have him on the show? Because I have nothing to talk about today. So we can talk about you. So
yeah, I've got nothing either.
Well, let's talk about me then. Yeah. Let's go.
It always comes back to Simon in a good way.
Yeah.
Simon's weird random rants. Well, I mean, Don, the podcast is a big fan of you because like of all... You're very much one. I mean, you know, we know each other really well. We go way back, blah, blah, blah. But like, you're one of the people who's sort of been the most openly, vocally enthusiastic about the podcast.
Oh, really?
Worth listening to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we've had a few other emails.
I haven't told anyone
messages.
That I listen to this.
Oh, yeah. No, but to me.
Oh, to you. Okay.
You've told me that you like it.
Probably for the best.
Apart from the occasional email and text and stuff we get, like, you know, other people who have sent us stuff to say, hey, we like it or everything. But yeah, you've consistently mentioned how much you actually like it.
I do. It's my favorite magic podcast, so good job.
There you go.
Because of the realness.
It's real.
That's right. And that I think that was, I made that comment that it's a real podcast, and that comment has been quoted about 15 times on the podcast since.
See, the podcast's a fan of you.
Thank you. You should
be surprised by this.
Was never credited, but it's just...
Well, that's actually a good point because I do sort of err on the side of not mentioning people's names just in case someone, because you can always mention someone later, but you can never unmention someone. You can never take back a mention once it's out there in case someone was like, oh, I'd actually rather stay anonymous.
Right.
That's just a general thing I've learned in life.
What you're thinking, I didn't want my name associated with the podcast.
you never know.
When this thing tanks and we get very bad press over one, you don't want to be associated.
Hey, yeah, true. Listen, Nick, self-deprecation, Paul.
Yeah.
He's so, like, so we had this whole conversation about self-deprecating humor and what's her name who did Nanette? What's her?
Hannah Gadsby.
Hannah Gadsby. Talking about this.
We've had this exactly the same conversation about five times. Simon's Hannah Gadsby analogy. But it's still explained it for people.
Like, listen to the gospel of Hannah Gadsby. She gets it.
Well, it's like talking about self-deprecating humor, which is my whole MO. This is all I've been doing, and it's an adjustment because it's what you've been talking about. People legit like the podcast, and I'll still make the joke of, oh, you're one of three people that listen to it.
Yeah.
And that's not true. We can look at the numbers, and people actually listen to this thing. It's just kind of easier to cut it down.
Yeah.
So only if
you suck.
That's the thing. In my mind, it makes it better because I'm like, oh, we don't take it too seriously. It's fine. But I understand the whole thesis behind it.
Yeah. Well, it's also I think this is why, just did this showcase thing recently. Like, I think this is why, like, real talk, Nick, I think it's why you're struggling with booking sometimes because it's that, like, people perceive it as a negative energy.
Sure.
And a lot of people don't like that or respond well to it.
Yeah.
I think it's cool. It's fine. But, like, I'm only so intense about this with like everyone, including both of you in different ways, because I've been on that journey.
You literally just did it to me at the coffee shop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But like it was, and I mentioned it was like the first person who ever called me out on that was Max Maven way back the second time I worked at the castle. And I was doing the same kind of jokes that we all do and a lot of magicians do. Was it you telling me who was said, stop magicians, stop doing when we were walking to Tiago this morning, Dom? He said someone called out magicians on all making self-deprecating humor about how it sucks to be a magician.
Oh, that was me.
Oh, that was you.
I worked with a comedian for 3 weeks.
That's right.
And he does a lot of shows with other magicians. And he's like, that was his biggest pet peeve of why, if you're doing this, why do you keep making fun of yourself? Just own it. Own that you're doing this really cool thing and you're making people happy. And I think it's a legit argument. I think you can make a couple of jokes in the show. But I think you can go too far with it.
Yeah. I think self-deprecation works as a garnish. It's like a little hint of it is great because to take yourself too seriously, yeah, you're a wanker. No, that's bullshit. But you can go easily so too far the other way, and many magicians do. Like, you know, like the joke you're doing in the show that I think isn't good.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pick that hill to die on.
Yeah. Well, I think the Hannah Gadsby analogy, what was – so she says she had to stop doing self-deprecating humor because that was – feeding into her own, was it, insecurities?
Well, it's basically once you base your material and performing identity on your shitness and or pain and or trauma and or ineffectiveness as a human being or whatever, now if you would ever fix that and become a healthy, full human being, you don't have your material anymore. And being using that stuff as an asset in your shows becomes kind of – it is almost a form of it getting you addicted to being that dysfunctional human being.
So I think that's maybe different because that was true to her. That self-deprecation was about real stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if Nick was to make a joke about magicians and, oh, it's embarrassing, my parents are embarrassed by my career choices or whatever – Might not necessarily be true.
It's not even accurate.
It's for the gag. Actually, that's okay. It's not really
your life. At that point, like, is the series not always, but a lot of good comedy comes from truth and relatability. And so, and this is the thing that Max mentioned way back is like when you make a joke about, you know, oh, you know, a magician, so you're always single or no one's, you know, whatever, magicians being unattractive. He's like, a solid percentage of the audience is like confused by that because they think it's cool and being a magician is amazing and you're really interesting. And they're like, so it's just jarring to have a joke about something that's clearly not true to them at least. Yeah. And some people will disagree. Yeah. And some people are like, oh, magicians are dumb, but that's absolutely not the whole audience by a long
lot of
shot.
The, yeah, like we were saying here, a lot of the time, those people aren't the ones coming to the shows. The people that are coming to the shows are excited about it. And it's like most people who come to comedy shows are fans of comedy. They're not going there to go, well, I don't really like comedy, but I'm going to show up anyway.
Yeah, it's like if the Beatles were doing jokes between sets about not being able to get laid. You'd be like, wait, that just doesn't even – like, it's jarring. It just doesn't seem right. Now, that's
I don't believe
are you calling
that.
Yourself yeah, the Beatles?
That's an extreme example,
Simon, just compared
but to
us
point
to the Beatles.
Out,
yeah.
A lot of people in the crowd are seeing us in that light. Whether or not they should be is a separate question.
Yeah, I don't think any of my fans have ever looked at me and seen me as a Beatle.
Oh, fuck you. 100% some of them have. Absolutely. And to those people, when you make that joke, it's really jarring to them. Mm. Like, and that's absolutely not the whole crowd. But as, you know, as performances get better, if you're doing a good show, a lot of people in that crowd think you're the fucking man. And it will be jarring to them to have a an excessively self-deprecating comment. If you do an aside like, you know, hey, not curing cancer here, or whatever. You know, this is a terrible example. It's a bad joke. You know, like an aside self-deprecating joke rather than like, oh, man, yeah, that's 6 years of why I had no social life. Ha, ha, ha. You know, those just don't work. It's not funny.
Well,
they
not
get
funny.
A laugh, you know, but yeah. That's about it. And they can get a laugh because of like the shock value or the surprise value or the awkwardness value or whatever, but they just don't ring true a lot of the time. And we can do better.
Guys, we can do better. How do you approach magic? How do you approach your show? Like, what kind of perspective are you coming through it? Because Simon speaks highly of you.
Yeah, oh, Dom's the man.
Yeah. Which Beatle am I most like?
You're Ringo.
Thank you.
You're the John Mayer of the Beatles.
Hey, I like John Mayer.
How do I approach magic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think just... I do things that I think are funny and that I want to do. I think I try and make it something that I would like to watch. That's basically it. That's my philosophy. I think if I think it's a funny thing, I do it.
Yeah.
I don't really care about what other people, well, I mean, I do, but, that's not my, I don't think about what the audience is really going to like. I'm like, oh, this could be a fun thing to do. Let's do it. And I think that often just works. I think what I like ends up being something that most audiences like, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I think as long as the audience sees that you're having a good time and enjoying what you're doing, that's half the battle.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. And that's not always the case. I'm not always up there, like having a ball. I don't always absolutely love it, but you've got to sell that illusion.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Understand that. Yeah, there's so many times where you're walking out on stage and going, I don't want to do this right now. But then you get out there and you have a nice back and forth and it's you fall into the state of mind that you're supposed to be in.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah.
Well, the reason why Dom's here, like, is that he's absolutely one of my favorite people in Australia doing magic right now. There you go.
Oh, thank
compliment
you.
Town.
Yeah, it's nice.
But yeah, like you're doing smart, intelligent, good stuff that you give a shit about, and you're an actual interesting, good, nice person. And like, it's so rare to find all those traits together in one performer. It's a lot of people doing good stuff who are kind of douchebags, honestly, or narcissists, or just very self-centered. Whereas you actually give a shit about both the quality of your material and the audience and your connection and relationship to them.
Yeah.
In a way that is great and uncommon.
Thanks.
No worries. There you go. That's
I think
that's the episode.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
And done. Let's talk about how Dom's great.
Yeah, yeah. and can continue
with that. Exactly.
Like, you've done the Fool Us, you have an upcoming appearance on AGT, you've done the other Got Talent shows, yeah?
No, so this is my first Got Talent show, yeah. I did Pentel Fool Us. And yeah, I'm about to appear on AGT, and don't know when this episode's airing, but I think it's on around the 11th.
Potentially 15th.
Your episode's going to air on the 11th?
So I may have already aired.
Find it on the YouTube.
There you go.
I'm not 100% sure.
That's actually really funny, because if this airs just after, this episode will get all-time record downloads because of Google's for Dom after the show. Because that's a real thing. That'll happen. We'll see. You know, whether or not that... And that's the point. We all know. It's one of the reasons we hang out. Because like, we know
telling
these
shows
don't actually mean anything. Still coming very clear now. I understand what's going on in this podcast.
Gonna get some
talent. I actually had no clue you were doing AGT until he told me before we saw you.
We're going to make $40 on Patreon this month.
Yeah. Hey, if you like the show, like and subscribe. Jesus Christ. Give us $1 a month.
Speaking of which, I believe I am a Patreon
subscriber. Are you really?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think.
I'm going to look up how much you're giving us. You don't have to tell us.
I think it's a fiver. I think it's $5.
That's pretty solid.
You are welcome.
That puts appreciate him in the top tier.
And nice seriously, if you're listening, look, I'm not kidding. Give money to podcasts that you like. If you like this, give them money. Like, support podcasts, support free artists and people who are putting content out there, and have a Patreon because seriously, like, it's the least you can do.
Well, there's so much stuff out there that is making money and like gets picked up by marketers and whatnot. Yeah. And you're like, why did this get picked up?
Exactly,
but
right.
Yeah.
That's what's so great about this whole thing.
I love the Patreon model. I love it. People are making good livings out of getting money just from their fans. Mm-hmm. And it's so good. And I really am a big advocate for paying people on Patreon. So do it.
I haven't done any of the work, but I really don't want to do advertising, ads on the podcast for other things.
Well, it's also one of those good things. This is where I sort of made peace with the idea of sales, right? And marketing and promo is you're not trying to persuade someone to give you money. You're just letting them know that the option is there should they want to support the thing to keep happening. Because, like, say there's a bunch of, like, web comics I absolutely love and read. And if I found out that the artist was like, I don't know if I can keep doing this, I'd be like, oh, hell yeah, take my money. I want you to keep doing this.
Mm.
Like, hell yeah, I would like the option to have an effect on keeping the thing I like happening and being made. It's a really good option to have.
Well, it kind of goes back to what you were just saying of, you know, creating something that you would want to see. That's how I kind of stumbled into my stuff, or at least what I'm doing currently. It's like, okay, what's something I would want to see? And that's good to hear that you're doing that too. And that it kind of ties in a little bit, both of people just doing what they don't see is already out there and that they have something of value to give. Mm. So there's something to that.
What are some other things you like, Dom? Because I know we've talked about podcasts that you love listening to as well.
What are the podcasts do I like listening to? I listen to a lot of Australian comedy podcasts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I could rattle a few off. Probably won't mean a lot to people, but Tofop, which is Will Anderson. Will Anderson's a big comic in Australia. I actually listen to everything by Will Anderson. I'm a big fan. Willosophy.
Nice.
And I subscribe. He does a podcast with his buddy about football as well. He has like 5 podcasts.
Nice.
I don't know.
For US listeners, this is Australian football.
Oh, yeah. Australian football. And the show is called Two Guys, One Cup, which is a magnificent title. it's very clever because the two teams they support have only ever won one premiership.
Oh,
and
funny.
They call the premiership a cup in Australia. So it's two guys, one cup.
That is very funny. Amazing.
And it's a really, really great show. But I'm imagining not many people who listen to this would also want to get on board an Australian football podcast.
Look, you never know. It might be extend you culturally. Get to discover some new horizons.
Yeah. I don't listen to a lot of magic podcasts, if I'm totally honest.
Yeah.
I we're talking about one earlier. Plug other magic podcasts on this one?
I'm going to edit all this out. You can say what you want. I'll take it out.
Yeah. Well, I'll start by saying it's not as good as this one.
Number one magic podcast.
No, the best magic podcast is the Magician's Podcast by Richard Young.
Because he actually does good stuff.
He puts effort into it. Yeah.
And he actually cares.
Yeah.
That's not self-deprecating. That's just
what we were talking about. Can you, in your own words, I remember way back you told me, let's just trade compliments back and forth, that, and I'm paraphrasing, but why you like a lot of comedy podcasts but not a lot of magic podcasts.
I think that's not just with podcasts. That's with in general. I like watching comedy shows. Going to watch stand up, and I love stand up. I'm a huge fan of stand up. I love sketch comedy. I love like you. I think you were the ones who really pushed me to go and seek out clowning. I love that.
Oh, interesting.
Amazing stuff. Not a huge fan of watching magic shows. And the reason is, I think it's different for podcasts and for the live thing. Live is just, I rarely see something new and exciting in magic because, and that's the same with, I think, a lot of stand-up comedians. They don't get a great kick out of watching stand-up anymore because they can see a lot of the stuff coming. They've seen all the structures and these topics joked about before. And that's why I'm not a huge fan of going to see magic shows, I think, because...
Mm-hmm. I will say the exception of in LA is that we're very lucky to see, you know, at minimum 7 different magicians every week. Yeah. So you can kind of seek out and find different things and kind of discover new voices. But I, yeah, certainly understand that. And I was like that before I moved to LA of just like, it's all kind of the same to me.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Because, yeah, when I'm at the castle, I'll go see every single show and sure. I'll enjoy most of them.
Yeah.
All of them. And don't get me wrong, I still do like, go and see. I do see a lot of magic shows still. I'm not someone who says, I'm not going to watch magic shows. I think it's important to watch sure. other magic.
And, yeah. But it's rarer to find something that really speaks to you.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
But with podcasts, I remember you were saying kind of about that in comedy podcasts, you tend to, they're more honest and more open.
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, so that was the compliment I gave you. It's like, I think you guys are like that. Yeah, magicians podcasts, I don't know, not the magicians podcast, podcasts with magicians. I don't know. There's this sort of like... I don't know. What's the vibe? What's the vibe that magicians give off in podcasts?
I think, again, I'm trying paraphrasing you from memory. It's that sort of thing about like trying to contrive that they're great and everything's awesome and live the dream. It's almost a marketing spiel rather than a genuine conversation about real life.
I don't remember saying that, but that's, I agree with it.
Yeah. So probably because when you said that to me, it was really thought provoking. Like that was something I didn't really realize that we were doing unintentionally here.
I think it's
unusual.
Yeah, definitely. You guys, like I said, it's real. It's real
stuff. We just brought you along to establish how great we are. That was really the motivation for the whole thing.
But enough about that.
Yeah. What are you excited about right now and what are you struggling with right now?
I'm genuinely excited about AGT. I'm really excited. I think it's a great challenge to come up with pieces that I'm really, really proud of. That's my goal at the moment, is to go out there and do a really, really great piece. And then if there are other rounds after that, then that's really exciting. It gives me another chance to come up with a great piece. So I really am excited about that. I'm excited about being at the Magic Castle. I love the Magic Castle. It's like a week of pure focus on crafting your 20 minutes. Yeah. I love that. I rarely get that chance to just nail, to sort of like sit down and really, really fine tune a 20 minute bit again and again and again. So that's really cool.
So side note, just to explain to people who don't know, Dom is actually in LA right now performing a week at the Magic Castle.
Yeah.
And when you do the castle, you're doing 3 or 4 sets a night, 7 nights in a row. So it's such a high frequency of performances that we don't normally get to do.
Yeah.
So it's great. It's a great workshop ground.
Yeah, it's really, really great workshop. Material. And I love that's that. Awesome. This is my favorite thing. This is my favorite thing in magic is workshopping magic. So this is really great. What else excites me? We've got Melbourne Magic Festival coming up.
Oh shit, yeah, that's right.
Melbourne Magic Festival coming up.
Pitch there.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
We're doing a show in that, aren't we?
We are.
We're doing
this is actually going to be great.
Where can they get tickets?
Where can you get tickets?
Google Melbourne Magic Festival and go to the very confusing website.
Yeah.
That's how.
You know how to operate
you know how to use a computer.
A browser.
Yeah.
So we're doing a show together. Called the Penn and Teller,
as seen on Penn and Teller Foolers. Because tell us the story of that show.
Well, yeah, so it was originally going to be a 3-man show with me and a couple of buddies, Ruben Moreland and Henry Vargas from Brazil. Ruben's from New York. We were going to get together and do a show. Henry bailed, Simon stepping in.
Swooped in.
Yeah, we realized that we'd all been on Penn and Teller. So we thought we would use that as our show title and hopefully it will help us sell some tickets.
Yeah, and then it's that whole thing that, again, like one of the reasons I think we all get along is we're good at doing stuff, bad at thinking about how to sell and market it.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And because, again, there's often that correlates with a person who's more, I don't know, cheesy and insincere or whatever. But yeah, we were just going, it'd be fun to do a group show. And then I accidentally just realized, oh yeah, we've all been on Penn and Teller. Oh, that could be a good premise. And then suddenly realized, holy shit, that is the best marketing premise ever. That show's going to sell out in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And we just never even realized that. And now the show's selling super well, which is great because that rarely happens.
The show's incredibly hot in Australia right now.
Yeah.
Really hot.
Is it really?
Yeah, really. So it's It's airing on ABC.
Oh, you know that? Yeah.
Yeah. So it is on ABC. I think it's a couple of seasons behind.
And ABC is one of the five big free-to-air terrestrial TV channels in Australia. And
is cable... it a different ABC than what we have?
Oh, yeah,
here?
Completely. Okay. Australian Broadcasting Corporation. That totally makes
government funded.
Yeah. And in Australia, reliable. Cable TV is not nearly as big as in the US. Okay. Most people are just watching the five terrestrial channels.
Similar to BBC in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. Much more like the BBC. It's the Australian BBC.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and yeah, so Pete Penn and Teller Fullis is on ABC, which means it's one of the most watched shows just in Australia.
It's also on Australian Netflix.
Oh, really? Well. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
But the Netflix is a couple of seasons behind. They cannot add it to Australian Netflix because the ABC has to air their episodes first before it can be on Netflix.
That's funny.
So, and the ABC is also just a couple of seasons behind. But that said, it's really, really hot. Like people will, it's still, you know, when you're out doing a gig, it's the number one thing. Yeah. It's, oh, have you seen this Penn and Teller show? You should go on Penn and Teller. And funny enough, I'm not sure if I've told you this.
No.
I think I have. I've told you this. I don't tell people that I've been on the show.
Oh, interesting.
Because I used to. I used to get so excited about it. And I thought they would say, oh, have you seen this show called Penn and Teller Fool Us where the magicians go on and they try and... And I used to be like, well, not only do I know this show, but I've been on the show. And I thought they would get really excited about that. But they didn't. Because... They had a follow-up question, which was, how did you go? Did you fool them?
Yeah.
And spoiler, did not fool them. And when I mentioned that, it's like, yeah, oh, sorry to hear about that. Damn, they are tough. Not many people do, I guess. It's like I went on and lost.
It's so frustrating. I mean, with Simon being the exception, there's so many that have fooled them that you're like, well, that's good. But the routine itself wasn't, in my opinion, wasn't great. And I think... And there are ones that are amazing that fool them and deserve it. And there are other ones that you're like, all right, that's kind of a technicality. And that is the tough part about that show is like the only thing that people care about.
Yeah.
Like I can't have an opinion on this because I haven't been on the show. Mm. So no matter what my – I sound
– Well, we'll get to that. Oh, I have That's
stories.
A whole different story.
I have
Because TV doesn't make sense and is not a reflection of reality
I literally
anyway.
Had – I'm no joke. I was at Magic Live in August. I was going to do an interview with Piff, who, you know, great guy, walking over to do the interview. Out of nowhere, one of the producers comes up to me and says, hey, you're Nick Paul. And I go, yeah, nobody knows who the hell I am. And so it was kind of shocking. He goes, oh, I'm one of the producers for Fool Us. You know, we're going to get you on, man. It was great. Awesome. Just email me. And I go, oh, okay, that was strange. And then this whole fall, I've emailed him three times, no response. But,
yeah, wow.
Man.
It's it's one of those weird things of I don't know why. And I've made peace with it. And I'm not making any judgments and I'm trying not to make this about me, but I'm also not trying to give an opinion one way or the other about it.
Yeah, man. Everyone's been on P&T, man.
That was honestly why I even went on it, because I don't like TV shows. I don't like TV competitions. I don't like reality TV shows. I don't like any of it. But when Fool Us came knocking, I'm like, I don't want to be the only motherfucker in LA who hasn't been on the show. That can be Nick. That guy.
Well, that was the joke. We did our group show last year.
Yeah,
we created a poster and Armstrong, Siegfried, you. So under your name, it was Late Fooler, Armstrong, Half Fooler, Siegfried Fooler. And under my name, it was TBD.
TBD, that was a really good poster.
That's great.
But this is stories like that, Dom, what you were saying about the gig. I find those stories heartbreaking because, like, and this was why when I got that whole, hey, turns out you did fool us, televised. About the gig, you would tell people, yeah, I was on the show.
And then they go,
sorry to hear that. Oh, that sucks. I hate that so much. And that was why, ironically, when they actually aired the episode where they said, yes, you did fool us, the main reason I was happy about that, apart from, yay, publicity, marketing, blah, 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 I was happy because now I can tell people, yeah, the truth that it doesn't effing matter whether you fool them or not. It's completely irrelevant. It means nothing about your quality and have it not sound like sour grapes.
Yeah,
because before, it sounds like sour grapes if you say it. But now I can go, no, fuck you all. It means less than nothing.
Yeah.
And Penn and Teller know that. If you're a member of the public, it means nothing. It means zero whether you fooled them or not. It is completely irrelevant to your quality, ability, anything.
Yet it means everything to them.
Yeah, because they don't know. They have no idea. They're completely
naive. And
don't
get me wrong. I love the show.
Oh, yeah.
I am a
love
huge
Penn
fan
Teller,
of Penn and Teller.
Love
I
them.
And that's how they sold the show, and that's the
yeah,
name
exactly.
of the show.
Yeah,
so
they had to come up with a competition angle, otherwise they knew it wouldn't get good viewing figures because the public wants to see...
You can't explain that.
The public wants the Colosseum. They want to see blood. They want to see sport. They want to see contests. They want to see drama.
I think
and so
it's
Penn
an
and Teller had to
premise.
Invent a premise.
And I think it's done a lot of good for magic.
It just has... Yeah. Overall, it's a great show. It just has this really frustrating side effect, like that it causes this misperception.
Yeah.
You're not wrong. And, I just literally, I'm now having flashbacks of me maybe a few years ago going in to defend myself and how awful that would have made me look. Like,
and I went through the same thing in that 2 year period between not fooling them before, oh no, you did fool us. And that's the thing. It means nothing, but it changes everything. And it's so frustrating that an otherwise excellent show run by a couple of excellent guys is causing so much heartache and frustration for so many performers because it's perpetuating this idea that fooling Penn and Teller is somehow a thing that makes you better or a successful
thing. I had a really funny moment. I was hanging backstage with Piff on Saturday after his show, and Matt Donnelly, who co-hosts Penn Sunday School with Penn, walked in. I think he works on the show with him there, and I've never met him before, but I said hello, hi, how's it going? He looked at me, he's like, oh, I feel like we've met before, you look really familiar. And I'm like, oh, I know why you know my face. You've seen my videos.
That's hilarious.
But I did not say that. I just said, oh yeah, good to meet you, man.
All right, let's start a campaign. Get Nick on Penn and Teller.
Yeah,
that's what we need.
Let's
a hashtag
do it.
For.
Let's go.
It's okay.
That's in your shin to win.
I've made peace with it.
Pick Nick.
Yeah. What was some? I can't remember. It was Penn. It was Penn or Teller. Both of them have said, you know, they're fully aware. They know what's up. They're fine.
Yeah.
Like they know that. Course. Yeah, fooling them does not like. Worse acts will fool them and better acts will not. Because
he said that many times.
Yeah,
the, show. Yeah.
The foolingness is nothing to do with the quality of an act. It's a weird, it's like, my analogy is always that it's like a cooking show, cooking contest show where you go, all right, we've got like, you know, Jamie Oliver and Gordon Ramsay and, you know, what the Alain Air guy or whatever. And like, all right, chefs, your job is to cook a dish where these three chefs can't guess what ingredients you used. And if they can't guess, you win. And if they guess the ingredients, you lose. And it's nothing about the quality of the food. Or how good does it taste? It's just, can you
sure.
not let them guess the ingredients?
Did you go deep into this analogy at your roving gig? You're like, listen here.
Oh, no.
I didn't fool them, but
the client's like,
that
the magician
I just tried
hasn't done a card trick in an hour.
Do
he's
the
just
trick.
He's
just ranting about
I've
the whole
seen.
Thing.
Another thing that I often used to go to when people would say, oh, so did you fool them? My line would be, but to be honest, I didn't. Wasn't really my intention. And people were just baffled. They're
they
like, what do you mean?
That
is the entire intention of the show.
Well, they think that's the entire intention of magic, too.
Right.
You're supposed to fool me.
And I thought that was a good answer for them for a while. I was like, nah, you know, I was going on to just do my this bit that I really liked.
Yeah.
And I got to drink beer out of a shoe on TV.
Yeah.
And,
and they just can't comprehend.
And like, but you're meant to fool them.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
I know.
Show. And I understand that as well. It's like someone saying, oh, yeah, I went on Shark Tank. Do you
Shark
Tank.
Oh,
Yeah. I went on Shark Tank. And I, to be honest, I didn't actually want to get there.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I was coming across.
The truth is too nuanced.
Which probably is the same case in that show. I imagine some investors would go on there because they just want to get their products and TV
exposure.
Get
some visibility.
They don't care about the investment.
Yeah,
they've already got millions of dollars in investment.
See, we are the naive idiots of the public.
Exactly right.
An industry that's not ours.
Yeah.
And I guess that's probably true for every industry. You have things that, in insight, you understand that the public has no idea about.
I'm discovering that now, especially with my cruise ship show. I was so against, you know, this mythology of, he's the performer of these, he's done these things. And I don't oversell it. I don't feel like I'm overselling it. But the audience, especially on a cruise ship, where they show up and go, all right, who's this guy? Entertain me. They want to be brought into that world.
Yeah, they want
that
mythos.
Yeah, they want the mythos of that, and I'm being less honest with them after, you know, like obviously not saying things like fool us, but in my case of other things I've worked on, of just kind of keeping it vague and keeping it happy and not getting too, because the second you say something truthful that's a little bit dark, you can just see their whole persona change.
Yeah, it shatters.
100%.
I was at the buffet, and the lady, some lady I was talking to after the show, complimenting, and she's like, oh, okay, did you just get on? I'm like, oh, no, I've been on for 3 weeks. Ready to go home, and her whole face just changed. I'm like, oh, I just ruined it for her.
Yeah.
Like she now knows that the show was fine, but he really didn't want to be here.
Yeah. Oh, it's rough, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so hard because, you know, we want genuine human connections. Yeah. Many people don't. Many people don't give a shit. But when you do, I've been surviving a lot of this stuff, whether it's ship shows or public shows or theater shows, by realizing there's no way to actually have a genuine human connection with most of these people. And that's okay. That doesn't make them bad. That good for them, but
you're just different.
Yeah,
you have a completely different
keeping an existence. Eye out for when there's someone who might actually have a chance of getting it, and then you can maybe have a genuine connection as a human being with them. For everyone else, you have to be a caricature. Totally. Your job is to there to be a character and be a caricature.
Exactly. And then occasionally, like you said, you'll slip out of that, and then you will say something real, and then they'll react like you said just then, and it's just the worst.
But every now and then you do get those people who do get it. And you realize, okay, this person. Yeah. I can be honest with this person. This person has a chance of getting it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's all right. Well, I mean, one of the reasons I survived in magic early was drawing a very clear line. There was a cartoonist called Hugh McLeod online who he called it the sex and cash theory, that there are sexy gigs and then gigs that pay. And for me, it was sort of the joy gigs versus the money gigs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I drew a very clear line in my head between them. Mm-hmm. Is this gig for money? Or is this gig because I'm excited to do something cool? And they are usually completely different. Yeah. Not always. Every now and then they overlap. Like Melbourne Magic Festival, this is going to be great. We're going to sell lots of tickets to it, and we're going to love it.
So.
Well, so far, it's already selling
true.
But like, you know, SmackDown that we're working on, Nick, like that's the same. I'm excited about it creatively, and I think it's got commercial potential. But most gigs, it's either, I'm doing this for a paycheck, and I have to put on the mask, mm-hmm. and be the happy person and do the thing.
Well, I'm getting to that point now. I've been doing this 18 years of, it's like I can't keep working gigs that don't fulfill me creatively and financially. So it's like, how do we go in that direction of where you be able to get – we've been doing this long enough. I think I deserve to be able to get both where I'm not just working for the paycheck. I'm kind of sick of doing that.
I'm so envious of people who are not only making – you know, they're only doing the gigs that they want to be able to do, and they make them enough money.
Oh yeah,
I'm so envious of that magic lifestyle. Like, you know, I'm still doing most of my money comes from roving gigs, which I don't love.
Yeah.
Don't love doing that.
Yeah, same.
The people who are out there doing tours, only doing their stage shows, and the best. I'm like, wouldn't that be?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, and that's why it's worth doing stuff like AGT, because that potentially gets you closer to doing a thing you actually care about and want to do. Like, once you have a bigger public image, just everything becomes easier to try and make happen. Hopefully.
Yeah. Tune into AGT.
Tune in.
Share my video.
So apart from not being able to tell people about Fool Us, what's irritating or frustrating you right now? What are you struggling with?
Oh, we didn't get to that, did we?
Lots of cool, exciting stuff. Come to Melbourne Magic Festival. Sure, it'll be great.
What's frustrating me?
Yeah, on any level. I don't know. What's challenging?
Right now, things are pretty good. Like, seriously. Like, right now is a really good time.
Yeah. I'm in the same spot. It's like, I'm fine. Yeah. Everything's
fine. Actually, hilariously, unusually more right now, kind of me too. Like, there's some minor frustrations, but overall, like, I'm excited.
Like, I can always use more money, but it's a weird spot to be
in. Is this the first happy moment on this podcast?
Oh, my God. This is for all three people?
It's great to be here, guys, in this moment.
It's because you're here. It's because he said to stop being self-deprecating.
Yeah, exactly right. This is a turning point.
SmackDown's been getting some traction.
This is where Two Mags, One Mic becomes one of those other podcasts we were talking about where they're just overly happy and positive.
This is the last episode of Two Magicians.
This is where it ends.
No, seriously, like, I don't have a lot to complain about. And I haven't thought about that. But now that you've asked me, I really don't. But, I mean, you know, there's the usual things that I've got to go back home soon. And in a couple of days, I've got to go do roving magic at a wedding.
It's going to be just death.
And then, you know, I've got to go home and work really hard to sell tickets for these Melbourne Magic Festival shows, which really shouldn't be something that I am complaining about because I love doing the Melbourne Magic Festival. These are the gigs that we like doing. That
but there's
talking
so
about.
Much legwork and grunt work to make them happen.
So, like, the stuff that I'm whinging about now is, like, basically saying that I have to work.
Yeah, I actually have to work hard. Yeah, what a complaint.
It's really quite a horrible complaint. But until this, can you suggest some stuff? What might I be struggling with?
I don't know.
No, I think the work is a legit thing. I'm in that same boat too of, we're talking about this group show, but in reality, it's going to take a lot of work to get it going and to keep it going. It's tricky where, I mean, in my case, I've been on the road since November. So it's like, getting back into the groove of doing the office hours, you know, booking the stuff. And that's the less glamorous part of it.
There should be really something that we complain about and say, oh, it's such a struggle.
Oh, we actually have to work hard. Everyone else's life. Well, I think the difference here is right now we're all in places, again, unusually, where, yes, we have to work really hard, but it's on things that actually we're excited about and have potential, rather than usually we're working hard on things that are annoying and shit and we don't even, like, value, but still have to kind of grunt through it anyway.
Yeah.
But the thing that I know from conversations we've had, Dom, is that we both find very frustrating is even when things are going well, people's complete naivety about what it's actually like to do, you know, what our lives are actually like.
Yeah, yeah,
and
totally.
Their perception of, you know, you were talking about, like, people you know, like families and friends and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's tougher, when it's closer people that you're like, no, you should get it.
Yeah.
It is
even
hard.
Even when you've explained it repeatedly.
People not getting it. That is what my struggle is.
I have close friends, same thing. I can't complain about stuff anymore because no matter what, it doesn't seem like a valid complaint.
I can't remember what it was. You were telling about something about, oh, that's right, people thinking you've paid people to be in the show using Stooges and Plants. There's no way. Well, even people who know you.
Yeah, this is not really a struggle or complaint. This is probably something else. I think the struggle in this area specifically is like family and friends who don't get what I do. Like we were talking about how we often avoid the bringing up that we do magic when people say, what do we do? Because we just want to avoid the conversation. It's very hard to avoid the conversation when people, you know, are family or family or family. So they know what you do and then you have to have the conversation. And then, you know, 5 seconds into the conversation, you just realize they have absolutely no idea about your life as a magician or what it can possibly be like, or just any understanding that it's even possible to make a living out of what I do. Mm. I had this moment the other day where I was going out to test some material at a show. I was going to test some material. And my girlfriend's mum was like, oh, so how much are you getting paid for this? I said, oh, actually, no, I'm not. I'm just doing it because I want to test material. And she's like, well, what do you mean? I was like, oh, test. So like, you know, you've got to like practice, you've got to make sure things work, you know, try it out. And if it doesn't work, then you might go back to the workshop and tinker with it. And she could not comprehend this. She was like baffled that people would go out there without getting paid to try and make a bit better.
Yeah.
People just assume, you know, it just happens. You just go out there and you're always great. You never have to work on a bit. Just
snap your fingers and beers appear.
Exactly right. Exactly. That's a struggle.
Yeah. I think it's the reason why that resonated me when you were saying that is, again, like of all the different ways you can slice up the human condition, like there's people, e.g. like us, if you want a genuine connection, that involves understanding and being understood, understanding the other person, them understanding you. And so when they just cannot even begin to understand you at all, it's really frustrating and really isolating, often kind of, I don't know, lonely for lack of a better word. I don't know. So I think there's a lot of different emotions in there.
Yeah. It is tough. It's really tough. And I think it's especially when it's important people. Like I was saying, it's my girlfriend's mum.
Yeah.
It's like I'm like almost going into to defend what I do. This is a valid thing. What I'm doing is important to me. And why don't you get it? But like, oh my God, first world problems.
Oh yeah.
What are your struggles, Dom? I have to work and people don't understand me as a musician.
I'm an artist.
Oh my God. So honestly, can't complain.
Well, it's that thing about like, you know, the Maslow hierarchy of needs, right? You know, once it's at the baseline, survival, food, air, shelter.
I've got my shelter.
Billions of people don't have that.
I've got all the bits. What do I need now? Girlfriend's mum to accept that I test material for free.
But like
that's my need.
Well, yeah. I mean, but the thing is, it's sort of like, I think it's the second layer up on the needs. Once you've got your survival needs met, it's human connection, love, affection, understanding, friendship, companionship. And it does put a wedge in that. Like, it makes that really hard to kind of get that actual, genuine, real human mutual connection and understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I find I've struggled with that a lot. It's like magic puts this wedge between you and everybody else.
Yeah.
And again, every profession has that to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in magic, it's particularly extreme because so much of it's hidden and invisible and hence unintuitive, even more so than most fields.
Yeah.
I was me and the comedian on the ship I just got off of, we're talking about this a lot of like, you feel so weird where you can't complain about anything because even like the other musicians on there are getting, I'm not 100%, but I know in my gut, they're not making anything close to what we're making at a weekly rate. And they're doing 4 shows a night, 5 nights a week. And we're doing shows two nights a week.
Yeah.
And we're in a guest room and they're staying in the crew area. And it's like, you would think even the people you want to kind of like, you know, have some office gossip with, you can't because you're this weird minority of like, well, all right, I'm getting taken care of really well and I can't complain about it.
Yeah. So privileged.
That's true. We're pathetic, aren't we? Oh, God. And this is it. This is the last episode. This is terrible. What are we doing?
This is fucked up. Do you want to hear something fucked up? One time I was booked to do... You know what people would see as fucked up?
Yeah.
Is listening into this and hearing you guys complaining about doing magic on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah,
no, it's so true. I've got to go on a boat and perform magic whilst being journeyed around to tropical paradises. Like, that sounds really, really bad to people. I'm not saying that's not valid, because it is. But one time, like, I was booked to perform magic on this beautiful island in the Whitsundays in Australia near the Great Barrier Reef, doing a week of shows there. And I had beautiful accommodation. It was a good paying gig. And I was halfway through, I was miserable because some nights I had to go out to the restaurants and perform magic to tables at the restaurants. And I was miserable. And then I just had a good hard look at myself and went, what are you complaining about, you pathetic individual? Like, seriously, it's just, not saying that these complaints... We all have problems. Yeah. Everyone has problems. Yeah. But I think a lot of our problems as magicians are very, very privileged problems to have.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because there's first world privilege, then like white first world privilege, then white male first world privilege, then white cis male first world privilege. Then
white
like,
male and magician.
Then, exactly. Like, it's even narrower. It's like the most pyramid, narrow niche of all. But then at the same time.
Top, baby.
But think about it, though. What you said earlier, right? How you're still deeply envying the people who are doing the gigs they want to do. Right? And then that's even narrower. Everyone is trying to climb the privilege ladder.
And then those people will have
As well. They'll be like, no, but those people who are doing the gigs they love, but also being respected by their peers.
Yeah, right.
Like, because, a lot of those people, I know I've met a couple who are killing it and doing gigs they love, but like it bothers them that the magicians they respect don't respect them.
Yeah.
Like, and that's a thing. That's a real thing that I've seen. They're like, oh, God, I know. I wish that, whoever, that Dave Williamson admired my innovation or whatever. It's fascinating that no matter where you are on that ladder, you can either find ways to complain and be sad or not.
I understand the complete argument against roving magic for sure, because I thought for the longest time I didn't like close-up magic. And then I realized, no, I just don't like doing close-up magic in restaurants where you have to bother people.
Yeah.
Because it's not a performer. You're just like showing up in these people's evening and they didn't know you're going to be there. And now you have to, maybe it's just me overthinking and not wanting to intrude. And I think that's a different type of magician mindset or performer mindset where you don't care that you're intruding on someone's evening unexpectedly.
It's one of the most bizarre social dynamics in the entire world. It really is very strange. And you had something, used to say something, which I've always thought was a little bit extreme. It was something about like close-up doing... I don't like doing roving gigs because when you go out there, you're going to ruin at least one person's night. Is that what you said?
More or less, yeah.
You're going to ruin someone's night.
I didn't say ruin someone's night, but like you're guaranteed to make at least one person's night worse.
like
you're going to be a net negative on someone's experience. Many people, you'll be a positive and they'll love it, but absolutely someone will be awkward, like will have to experience the awkwardness of like trying to find a way to politely reject you or whatever, like some way.
Yeah, and totally, and that's true. Yeah. You are going to put someone in an uncomfortable, and you know it. You've started your trick, and you know this person doesn't want to be there, but you've started the trick. You have a contract with this person.
Or you've interrupted their conversation that was in a really good spot.
Yeah, they were in a great conversation. Oh, there's a great networking opportunity. Yeah. They finally got the boss for a second.
Right,
finally got the boss. And then old Muggins comes along and finds four aces. When he's about to land a big buddy contracting deal and I pull a coin from his ear, it's going to go down well. But like you said, not everyone's night is going to be made worse. Like, I think 90% of people are going to walk away from there and you've actually made their night.
Yeah,
and they're going to remember that and it's going to be the best that's happened that week.
Yeah.
So you've got to remember that as well.
What's the human cost? What cost is acceptable?
Yeah.
How many people can be hurt?
Is one casualty?
Yeah. It's a really interesting question. Like the train, which you'd run over the one person or the five people on the train track.
Yeah. So,
Well, that's why when I do walk around gigs, because again, like most magicians, like, right now your bread and butter walk around gigs are paying the bills for you.
That's right.
And for us, ships are paying the bills. And everyone ends up with this kind of unsatisfying, but still thankful. You know, we're still so happy to have them. Way to pay the bills, because my God, the privilege of being able to pay the bills.
The amount of people that contact this, I just did this showcase for my ship agent. The amount of people that contacted me were like, "Hey, how'd you get that showcase?"
Yeah.
Like,
oh God. Yeah.
It reminds you of, oh yeah, this is, I'm doing something that people want to be doing.
Yeah.
People in my field want to be doing.
Well, you go through that sort of gratitude sine wave where, like, you realize, no, oh God, this is amazing. And you go, oh God, I hate this. I hate this so much. But then I find it was a meditation thing of, like, imagine that you didn't have it and really imagine that and go, oh God, that would be terrible. Yes, okay, I'm so happy to have this. And it can pivot that perspective. But I lost the thought. Walk around gigs. Oh, yeah, when I do walk around gigs now, which is thankfully less these days, I try and either sell the client on it or just do it. I take a movable table, like a folding table with a big closet mat, and I do opt-in walk around. And I stand in a very visible high traffic area and do fancy card stuff that people can see, oh, this guy's doing something, and they can approach you if they want to have a magic experience, which most people do. You're right. Yeah. 90% of people will go, oh, cool, what's this guy doing? But it's opt-in rather than opt-out. I think that's so important in life.
It's very important. I try to take on that same approach. Yeah. I have a small table. I don't just stand there in the corner doing, like, flourishes or whatever, because I think I may have tried that. Maybe from you. Maybe you told me to try that. Possibly. But
You got to do it right, Dom.
Yeah, you got to do it right. Exactly. I'm obviously doing it wrong.
Get it together.
But
it never worked for me. I've tried it too. It doesn't work for me. I have to bring people in, or I have to go up to people.
Well, bear in mind, when I'm doing flourishes, I'm doing it while looking for eye contact. Yeah. Like, I'm very much looking around, looking for people.
Yeah, looking down makes a big difference.
No, I'm visually looking for people to engage with and, like, invite them, offer with my eye contact. Like, hey, you know, would you like to come and check this out? And then they'll either break eye contact and leave or go, oh, all right, and come over.
So I do this before I begin my set, 5 minutes. I do a 5 minutes of what looks like setting up. I set up my little table thing. I just do a few flourishes. And as I'm doing that, you can see people looking at you. Go, oh, what's this? This is a thing. Oh, this guy's doing something. And you're right, you can pick up who's going to be into it and who's not.
Yeah.
And you've got your first group straight away. And I think it's also about like sort of a power thing as well. Like, when you approach someone with your little deck of cards, you're like, hey guys, let's see a magic trick. You're like, you don't have any power.
Yeah.
If someone comes over to you and says, show me something, you've got the status.
You're guiding
which
the
is
experience.
What I think you makes a better experience for everyone. Yeah. It's like when I was watching I was at a gig, and what made me realize this, there's a caricaturist, someone doing cartoons of people, and people would go up to them, line up.
Yeah.
And I was like, why can't this be like magic?
Yeah.
Imagine that. Like, this guy just had to sit there and people just came to him.
Yeah.
And he wasn't doing cartoons of anyone who didn't want to do it. Like, magic can be like that. And that sounds like what you do with your table thing.
Yeah.
It's tough to – the only major struggle for me that I get really in my head about is – getting that through the client's brain of, okay, so I'm going to be standing in one spot, and some of the time it's going to look like I'm not doing anything, but other times I'm going to have a crowd around me. So just like, as long as they know, as long as everybody else who's paying the bill understands that, I'm fine with it. But
so they're not looking over and seeing.
Yeah, because if there's like a 5 minute lull,
riffle shuffles,
it sucks. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Nick in the Corner almost sounds like a band name.
Yeah.
I like it.
I'm Nick in the Corner. No, that's R.E.M. Sorry.
But it's funny, isn't it? Everyone sort of ends up, if you're
losing
working...
magician.
Magician virginity.
Cut the self-deprecating humor. That was funny. I retract my observation.
Do you do many roving? Do much close?
I used to
do
a lot.
Call roving magic here?
Roving makes more sense. I call it strolling.
Strolling, yeah, that's strolling, right. Because I said roving once here, I think someone challenged me. And they're like, what? You mean strolling?
Yeah, there's different industries have different terms.
Whatever. Either way.
What do they call it? There's a different term in the UK as well. In the UK, that's right, they call it mix and mingle.
Mix and mingle.
Mix and mingle is the England term.
Mix and mingle.
Which is so British.
It's
bit of mix and mingle, Governor.
Yeah.
It's adorable.
But that makes sense too. That makes so much more sense than strolling. I've had to explain strolling to clients so many times that
strolling,
I don't know why
roving.
I still use it.
Yeah.
Mingling.
I think the term close up magic is becoming pretty mainstream.
Like
people hear close up. Oh, close up magic. I love close up.
I've seen so many TV shows that have referenced close up
magic.
You're right.
And it's weird how that term, I mean, that's such a, the linguistics term is overloaded. It means multiple different things, that one word is doing all this job. Because to a lot of people, close up magic now means like what Shin is doing, which is like small object magic on a giant stage via a TV projector, which is intrinsically not effing close up. But there's no term to distinguish that. Like in FISM, they call it micromagic, which sounds very goofy and European, but is actually a better term because it means, yes, small object magic rather than big object magic that's visible without visual augmentation or being a meter away from the performance.
Yeah.
But hey, it's a brave new world. We're figuring this stuff out. It's an exciting time.
Micromagic.
Micromagic. Which sounds very, yeah, sort of Central European. It was just the micromagic.
Try to sell yourself as a micromagician. Roving, strolling.
That's what my ex told me.
All I'm hearing is micropenis. That's all people even think of.
Yeah, I think every listener right now was also thinking the same thing.
But I'm not alone.
Yeah.
On that note. 52 minutes. Anything else you want to plug?
Yeah, if you seriously would like to see my stuff, ATT. You may have mentioned that. It's coming up.
Might come up.
That's all.
This is the first time we've mentioned.
If you're in Melbourne, Dom is doing a solo show at the MMF and is in the Penn and Teller Full Loss show at MMF, Melbourne Magic Festival.
Yeah. So a couple of shows at MMF. Also going to Edinburgh for the first time.
Oh, cool.
So,
yeah.
When is that?
August.
Wow.
So Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
That's right. Yeah. So doing a couple of weeks there on the Free Fringe. That is a free show. No need to book tickets, but please come.
That's great.
Yep.
Nice. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's been a good time.
Thanks for jerking off about privilege with us.
How good is it?
Let's cut that too.
Stay in.
Oh God. Okay. Bye. I've made a huge mistake.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs, @twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.